You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5.
Let's get to Mr. Gordon, who is on the line here at Freedom 106.5 FM. Let's talk a little bit about the conversation that has been created because of the comments of the Prime Minister, Dr. Andrew Holness, and what that has created, the new space of conversation. Good morning to you and welcome, sir.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So I know the time difference is as it is in Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago, so I do appreciate you coming out this early in the morning to have this discussion with us. So let's first talk a little bit about you. How did you get into the sphere of political analyst, and how has it been over the years looking at the geopolitics of the world changing so drastically?
So I am a lecturer in the Department of Government. So I teach courses in political science as well as political leaderships. So this is a part of what I do. I analyze political theories and political systems and political practices. And I have to keep current with what is going on in the region and globally as it relates to the important political developments. So political analysis comes naturally based on my professional position. Geopolitics have shifted significantly since the re-election of Donald Trump as U.S. president. He has taken a more hawkish and a more aggressive position in terms of both domestic and foreign policies, and obviously these aggressive foreign policy positions have had both direct and indirect implications for the Caribbean and for the unity of CARICOM, as evidenced by what we're seeing playing out now in terms of the divergent positions of different CARICOM heads of state on matters with respect to Venezuela and Cuba. Which I think this is what this discussion will be about.
The positioning, it has begun, as you said, with the more aggressive approach by President Donald Trump in the region, with the first initial comment being that it was about drug trafficking, it was about human trafficking, and now we are seeing it is diverting from that topic to include oil and gas. Was it something that was, a distraction, or was it an opportunity for the U.S. president to really shake up the region to have it in his pliable hands? How you feel about that? What is the thinking from the analysts in that perspective?
So it's important to add a bit of historical context to this discussion, right? And this is why I find Trinidad's position to be inconsistent with the historical ethos of Caribbean integration. The reason why CARICOM came into existence in the first place was for us to come together to strengthen our collective voice against powerful external forces like the United States of America. Our history shows that repeated external intervention and exploitation, across the Caribbean by the U.S. and other external forces in countries such as Haiti, Grenada, Dominica, and even Cuba. The reason why Cuba had a revolution in the first place was to resist the presence of U.S. in Cuba. The CARICOM was born out of this experience. So when we have a regional leader now aligning herself with external military interests, the risk surrendering this historical mandate, and it is moving the Caribbean closer towards neocolonialism. Historically, the presence of the U.S. and other countries in the region, of external forces in the region, has been exploitative, has been extractive. Those countries have historically taken more from us than they have given to us. And a part of us coming together was to create a powerful force to resist those presence and influence of those countries in our region and consolidate our sovereignty. I think what we're seeing now is based on the actions and pronouncements of the Prime Minister of Trinidad, we're surrendering that historical mandate. And apparently we have not learned any lessons from history.
That
to me is very concerning.
I'm glad that you brought up the term neo-colonialism. I think that is a very important definition we need to have within the conversation as you relate it to the original mandate of CARICOM. Can you define it for us?
Well, CARICOM has several pillars, and an important one that we should be discussing now is the pillar of foreign policy coordination, where the idea is that in terms of our foreign policy position that we can take in the international forum, we should project a unified foreign policy position, right? And to leverage our collective voices to reflect a unified foreign policy position that reflects long-term interests of the Caribbean, but as well as a unified foreign policy position that reflects principle. As you know, Jamaica and other Caribbean countries are signatories to a number of treaties and charters that hold us responsible to universal treaties governing, for example, or we treat the principle of sovereignty, non-intervention, due process, fair trial, equality for all human beings under law, and so forth. Mm-hmm. We are seeing a departure from those principles that we have committed to. Right, what we're seeing is a clear divergence among CARICOM leaders on issues involving Cuba and Venezuela. So while most Caribbean governments have maintained a measured diplomatic approach, Trinidad and Tobago has, however, adopted a more hawkish position, which is supporting expanded U.S. presence and openly condemning Cuba's system. And I think if Cuba is acting unilaterally and against the collective view of CARICOM or the collective position of CARICOM, I think this in itself inherently weakens CARICOM's collective voice internationally. Because if you're part of an organization and they're acting like an individual entity, then that defeats the purpose of the organization and that delegitimizes the organization. So I think this has thrust CARICOM into a serious legitimacy crisis.
And with the evolution of things like the Board of Peace by President Donald Trump, and there was another summit that he invited Trinidad and Tobago and Guyana to. I must say that the Prime Minister did say she is now hearing about it, and then more information on whether participation and so on by the country would be given later. Also, Dr. Ifran Ali made the same statement. He was invited and he knows that he may be there. He hasn't confirmed finally. The Shield of America's Summit. Is it that, as you say, it is a deepened effort to weaken the stance of CARICOM in the region?
Yes, let's be very clear. This idea of the U.S. Organizing a board of peace and Trinidad and some other countries thinking that U.S. is a protector, the savior of the Caribbean, is inconsistent with the evidence. The United States of America, pound for pound, has used military force to invade and conquer and destabilize more countries than any other state historically. Even since the 2000s, we can point to Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, all parts of the world where United States military intervention has led to the complete destabilization and has triggered severe humanitarian crises in these countries. So the argument that the U.S. is the savior and protector of democracy and human rights is not based on the historical fact. The United States has been a destabilizing force globally. In contrast, CARICOM has been a stabilizing force. So when the Prime Minister of Trinidad says that, Caribbean is not a zone of peace, I think that is reckless and it's unprincipled. And let me tell you why. When we say that the Caribbean is a zone of peace relative to the United States of America, the concept simply means that we have historically resolved conflicts through diplomacy rather than through war. In the history of CARICOM, no CARICOM member state has ever launch a military attack against another CARICOM member state. And in the grand scheme of things, that is an extraordinary record, considering that in other developing regions, for example, in Latin America, parts of Africa and the Middle East, we have seen cyclical, you know, cyclical instability and conflicts in those regions. We have avoided those conflicts. So, So the only military intervention that we have experienced in the region have come from the United States of America. Even the tension between Guyana and Venezuela that the Prime Minister of Trinidad speaks about, those tensions have only been rhetoric. They've remained diplomatic. There's been no military intervention to date.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this idea that the United States of America, of all countries, is managing a border of peace, and countries in the Caribbean are looking to the U.S. as a source of peace and stability, is obviously inconsistent with, and it shows us that we have not learned the lessons of history. And again, it reflects an unprincipled position, and again, it's a failure of our leaders to recognize that the U.S.'s presence in the region is always and has always been about self-interest, not about the unity or the preservation or altruism towards the Caribbean. It's always linked to self-interest. And it is not coincidental that the targets are Venezuela, an oil-rich country, and Cuba, with closeness to the U.S., and therefore the significant potential for increased trade between Cuba and the U.S., which the U.S. wants to leverage. The U.S. is already saying that it is going to reposition Cuba as a major trading partner of the U.S. when there's reform, when the political regime in Cuba reforms. The goal is to reposition Cuba as a major trading partner of the U.S. The economy and economic self-interest is always a bottom line. And it's unfortunate that too many Caribbean leaders are missing this.
Now, I wanted to just go back a little bit to the comment made by the Prime Minister, Mrs. Kamala Passabi-Sessa, that has the region in a bit of a tension-filled situation, that being that the CARICOM region is not a zone of peace. Is it that the language used is what is determining the final definition of what she meant? Is it that she literally meant that it is not a zone of peace? Or did it come from the individual lived experience of countries? For example, Trinidad and Tobago does have an extremely high crime rate, and we've been dealing with that. Is it that she talked about the idea of peace as it pertains to crime in Trinidad and Tobago, and then parallel to Jamaica as well? It's similar, but on different levels. Is it that that language was effectively twisted to make it sound that when we think of zone of peace, as you mentioned a little while ago, we think about military intervention, which CARICOM nations, as you said, not really equipped to do, but America has shown that force. Can we say that that language element had a lot to do with how the statements were perceived?
Yes, all right. So the zone of peace is a specific concept that is used in international relations, and it refers to a regional commitment to use diplomacy to solve tensions. Obviously, within the context of individual and CARICOM states, they're battling, you know, organized crime and murders and so forth. But the use of the word zone of peace is a separate concept that is used to really refer to use of diplomatic channels to resolve tensions. And on the matter of, you know, organized crime and the public insecurity that, you know, many Caribbean countries face, you know, the U.S. has said that, you know, Venezuela is a major source of regional insecurity. And as a leading source of narco trafficking in the region. I want to say to you and your listeners publicly that the data does not support that claim. And I want to say also that if we're serious about regional insecurity, we must confront illegal firearms trafficking, because that is a source of organized crime and murder across the Caribbean. You know what is factual? Roughly between 73% and 80% of weapons seized in the in Caribbean states originate from the United States of America, which means that the United States of America is a major source of insecurity in the Caribbean. So those weapons that fuel murders, robberies, and organized crime across the region originate from the United States of America. So any discussion about regional security must be consistent and evidence-based. So here we are seeing leaders looking to the United States of America to solve our regional security crisis. Yet, the U.S. is the source of our regional security crisis.
Yeah.
And therefore we should be directing a stronger posture towards the United States of America, not necessarily Venezuela or Cuba, because much of our crime issue here in the region stems from the United States of America. Mm-hmm.
Now, from that statement as well, the repercussions or the final results of the effect of America on these countries, for example, Cuba, the embargoes, sanctions. Realize I haven't mentioned Haiti as yet, because Haiti is another conversation in itself with similar scenarios that have placed these countries, Cuba, Haiti, Venezuela, and others in the region, in an economic situation that would require humanitarian intervention.
Right.
How, the thing is, as a CARICOM body, well, the body called CARICOM with one of the mandates to, in essence, be a brother's keeper, how can we give that assistance or give the criteria for assistance to these countries and yet still be immune to the consequences of those actions? Because I see right after the comment of your Prime Minister, Dr. Holness, U.S. Congressman has warned that Jamaica can see consequences of that. Does CARICOM at this point in time within the CARICOM summit need to give an outline as to how this can transpire and still be meeting the mandate of the body?
All right. So first of all, CARICOM, Cuba and Haiti are two full-time CARICOM member states. I may stand corrected about Cuba. Haiti, for sure, is a full-time CARICOM member state. Important fact is that even after Donald Trump demits office and this U.S. administration changes, we will have to coexist with Cuba and Haiti. Obviously, we share borders and we're close to each other geographically. It means that any destabilization in Cuba or Haiti will affect other Caribbean countries. Jamaica has already been affected by the destabilization in Haiti because that is fueling a migrant crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So the implications of the destabilization of Cuba and Haiti will spread across the entire Caribbean region. And therefore, we should be thinking more long-term. Because if we support efforts that lead to the destabilization and the disintegration of these countries, in the long term, it will affect the stability of the region because it will fuel other problems that will extend to other Caribbean countries. So that is the thinking that we should adopt. That it is in our best long-term interest to support the necessary human material interventions that will lead to the stabilization of Cuba and Haiti, understanding that the destabilization of these countries will have long-term implications for the region. U.S. does not share a border with Cuba or Haiti. We are the ones who are on the front line as Caribbean states. We are the ones who share borders and geographical proximity with Haiti and Cuba. Mm-hmm. And I will also say that the foreign policy priorities of U.S. governments change according to administration.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump will be in office for maybe another 3 to 4 years, and another administration will come in force. And the priorities of that administration may differ from the priorities of this administration. In fact, an incoming administration may very well roll back many of the more aggressive foreign policies of Trump. So our foreign policy can't be based on acquiescence to a sitting U.S. president. It must be of a more long-term orientation. And I will say finally that supporting humanitarian engagement with Cuba and Haiti is not an endorsement of the political systems of these countries.
Mm.
It's a principled stand against collective punishment of ordinary people. And for Cuba in particular, regardless of the ideology of the Cuban government, Cuba has historically supported CARICOM through El Care, education and medical cooperation, even under crippling sanctions. And that context is very important.
Mm-hmm. Now, and also in terms of natural disasters, I believe Cuba has been very helpful to Jamaica, especially after
very
Hurricane
helpful to Jamaica. Very one of our strongest historical partners.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the callers just before the beginning of this conversation made a reference to dealing with a country like China, for example, where development and having economic ties with a country that has systems that has been described as non-humanitarian, socialist, etc. How do we as CARICOM and also as individual nations work with or at least resolve that moral conundrum that stands with that to deal with trade? How do we establish those things?
Here is it. And this is what I find to be completely ironic and contradictory, not only on the part of the United States of America and other Western allies, but on the part of countries like Trinidad. Well, let's just extend maybe Guyana. I think Trinidad has been more hawkish than Guyana and other countries. Mm. It's you that we stand against authoritarianism, and we are pro-democracy, and we are pro-elections. I want your listeners to know that Cuba holds elections. Those elections may not be competitive, as elections are in the liberal democratic Caribbean context, but Cuba holds elections. You know, its countries don't hold elections? China, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. So I find it contradictory to denounce authoritarianism in the context of Cuba, because we see Cuba as a country that has very little economic leverage. Mm-hmm. So we denounce authoritarianism and communism in the context of Cuba, but we maintain, and Trinidad maintains strong diplomatic and economic relations with countries such as China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. All of these countries have authoritarian systems, and all of these countries have very dubious human rights records. And I might even add Israel to the conversation. Israel is locked in a two-year-long conflict with Palestine that many credible sources have described as a genocide. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians have been killed to date. The leader of Israel is an international warrant has been issued for the arrest of the prime minister of Israel. So if we want to talk about humanitarian and human rights and denouncing authoritarianism and communism and so forth, then how is it that we're only singling out Cuba? Yes, so we have normal relations with other authoritarian, other countries with very diverse human rights records. Again, position lacks merit. It is unprincipled. It is discriminatory. It is singling out Cuba for unfair treatment. It cannot be defense. It's dependent. It's illegitimate.
When we come back, I'm going to take a very short break. When we come back, let's talk about sovereignty of the islands in CARICOM and decisions like this. Can we find a balanced ground? Can we find a place to work from? Stay tuned. And of course, we will take in your messages at 306-1065 and some calls. This is The Human Impact. As we've got a few questions and calls coming in as it pertains to our topic this morning, as we talk about the CARICOM relations also with Trinidad and Tobago, Venezuela, Cuba being the next, talking point. Very strong talking point in the meeting as the heads come together for the 50th CARICOM Summit. Questions coming in. Will CARICOM go the way of the West Indian Federation? Another message here says, you were holding my attention for a bit, but this caller makes no sense. It is his opinion and it have no substance. I have no choice but to switch the station at this time. Twisted, really. Can we balance TNT with the other islands? That may be a CARICOM gold zone of peace, a concept even for TNT. And the Prime Minister say at this time it is not so for TNT. Another one says here, we need a balanced discussion on this issue. This guy sounds anti-American. He may have evidence for his points, but I am sure there are counterpoints. What say you, sir?
I am not anti-American. I'm not anti-America. I am anti-hypocrisy, inconsistency, and in unprincipled position. And we must call out hypocrisy, inconsistency, and unprincipled positions where they exist. And that is precisely what I have been doing.
Mm.
I've been clear about the basis for me saying that the position that some Caribbean states have taken against Venezuela and Cuba is unprincipled and inconsistent, because we have normal relations with authoritarian and non-democratic states, yet we denounce Cuba for having authoritarian and a non-democratic political system. We say that the Caribbean is not a zone of peace, and we're looking to the U.S. to restore regional security. Yet the United States of America has been the major source of insecurity and destabilization in many parts of the world. We say that the U.S. is an important strategic partner of the of CARICOM, and that CARICOM is not a reliable strategic partner. The reality is that CARICOM is actually one of Trinidad and Tobago's major trading partners. Trinidad consistently enjoys a trade surplus with the regional markets. In practical terms, Trinidad benefits significantly more from CARICOM, arguably more than CARICOM benefits from Trinidad. So the thing is, a lot of persons don't like the truth. A lot of people don't like the truth because they're blinded by raw partisan loyalty. Yes, I am a historian, and I have a responsibility to provide historical context to the conversation. I can't just get on here and just speak without an appreciation of history and an appreciation of facts and evidence. Mm-hmm. And a lot of persons don't like that. And I'm assuming that that is a position of many of your callers as well. I have been very fair. I think that persons and entities who have been unfair are those who are singling out particular countries for unfair, unreasonable, and discriminatory treatment, and whose views are not evidence-based. They're driven by a pragmatism. And I've said it to you before, that when administrations change, the priorities of governments change in the United States of America. And therefore, we have to be future, long-term oriented in our foreign policy positions, recognizing that the next incoming U.S. administration may not have the same priorities as the current administration. And we must consider what could be the implications of a raw alignment with Donald Trump without recognizing the cyclical nature of U.S. presidency. And I think that my position is very much, my position is nuanced, mm-hmm. and my position is a principled and logical position that is in the best interest of CARICOM.
Now, from the Prime Minister's statement, Dr. Andrew Holness, he highlighted the economic hardship, energy shortages, and growing humanitarian challenges that are being experienced in Cuba. He also said we must address the situation in Cuba with clarity and courage. Dr. Holness said, noting the Cubans are grappling with severe economic hardship, as I said, energy shortages and mounting humanitarian strain. A prolonged crisis in Cuba will not remain confined to Cuba. It will affect migration, security, and economic stability across the Caribbean basin. It is therefore important that we carefully consider this matter and take collective action. And just to bring it to perspective as well, the conversation here in Trinidad and Tobago has been focused a bit on migration in terms of Venezuelans coming into Trinidad, being regularized, being recorded. There was a campaign to have Venezuelan migrants register here for reasons of making sure we know the numbers, getting them assistance, etc. So we see the effects of the embargoes and sanctions being placed on Cuba and also on Venezuela. How, as a region and the economic body that CARICOM should be, how should we address this?
Yeah, so this goes back to the point I've been making, that instability in Cuba and Venezuela and Haiti will have broader implications for the Caribbean. That is what our Prime Minister alluded to, that the issues facing these countries will not be confined to the domestic borders of these countries. the issue, the insecurity in these countries will fuel broader crises, including migrant crises, economic crises, and so forth. And that is why it is in our best interest, our best long-term interest, to support the required humanitarian interventions. Obviously, our ability to help these countries is limited because we are facing resource challenges of our own, because we are generally undiversified small economies, which means that we will have to mobilize support externally. So what we have at our disposal is our collective voices that we can use to make representation on behalf of these countries and underscore the nature of the crises facing these countries and appeal for broader humanitarian interventions, which must not be conflated with support for the regimes, but other people who have nothing to do with the political systems of their country are not to be collectively punished. There's a blockade on Cuba, which restricts the flow of essential goods and services into the country. The economy has come to a halt. Trouble has come to a halt. The basic necessities that we take for granted, Cubans do not have access to those necessities. And we know the reality in Haiti as well. We know what is happening in Venezuela. Again, we are standing against collective punishment of ordinary people who are trying to survive and live just like all of us, who have nothing to do with the decisions and the policies of their leaders. That's a humanitarian position. And again, I can't understand why some of your callers would take offense to me taking this position that we should take every action possible to avoid instability and insecurity in our region, because it does not benefit any of us here in the Caribbean.
Let's get back to the messages as well. This one here. But all countries have inconsistent behavior. Every single one. North Korea, China, Saudi Arabia. Can your guest name a country that is actually consistent? Another message says here, since UNC won the election, not a day goes by without the prime minister being a problem. I don't think we understand the discussion. And these are some of the comments that do hinder the conversation to get deeper and to give it a broader perspective outside of what we see in Trinidad and Tobago. Let's take another call, 625-2257, 627-3223. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Tesca.
Good morning, Port of Spain.
And morning to our honorable guest. I want to make a profound statement here. No. Right now, CARICOM is made up of a nation of independent states. We are evolving. I want to repeat that for you, academia and radio presenters and everybody. CARICOM is made up of an independent, number of independent states. When you're independent, nobody can tell you what to say, what to do, and where to go. Let me repeat this statement. CARICOM is an association of independent states, and Prime Minister Holness substantiated that we are not, CARICOM is not about uniformity. We are independent states and we are evolving. CARICOM is a number of independent states. Would you like to comment on that, please?
Thank you so much, Porter Swain. Mr. Gordon.
Yes. CARICOM is a regional organization of independent states with shared interests and a shared mandate, right? So coming together means that CARICOM has collective responsibility despite being a collection of independent states. And all CARICOM member states have committed to those collective responsibilities. CARICOM rests upon four pillars based on commitment among CARICOM states. So, while she's correct that CARICOM is a coming together of independent states, we must also recognize that no state operates in isolation. We're living in what is known as a period of globalization, where events outside the region and within the region affect all CARICOM, all states, especially smaller states, which are far more vulnerable and volatile. So this argument that, well, you're an independent state, I can pursue my own policies, that position does not consider the fact that within the context of globalization, risks are shared. And therefore, the decision that you make as an independent state mm-hmm. can have implications in terms of your relations, economic and otherwise, with other countries. No country stands alone. And especially within the context of small and diversified economies, the need to create bilateralism and partnerships and collaborations to resist and to sustain themselves. And that was the ethos, that was the context within which CARICOM came into existence.
Was built,
recognizing yeah. that as the average population of a CARICOM state is 250,000 per people. Individual CARICOM states, have no leverage in global politics. But when we bring together our cumulative voices, our cumulative resources, our cumulative population of over 44 million, it gives us a more powerful position in global politics. So that is how we should see CARICOM. Mm-hmm. Not in the very insular way that you call just, you know, perceive CARICOM.
Mm-hmm.
Because insularity will not advance the collective position of the region. Because as individual entity, we have very little leverage. We have greater leverage when we come together and unite and project a unified voice in global politics.
Some of the comments...
So I think the caller is missing that important point.
Some of the comments from earlier discussions from the time the conflict with Venezuela started is that we have no power where America is concerned as individual countries in the Caribbean. At the same time, it gives a defeatist kind of attitude as to, well, since we're so small, we are not able to stand up to the atrocities from the humanitarian aspect that we've been seeing in countries that have... been affected by embargoes, by in sanctions, implemented by a country, first world, as we've been calling them for the longest while, that as far as President Donald Trump seems to be going at this rate, has no place for accountability. And it is very disheartening that for some reason, as a collective body, we don't seem to have the confidence to think that even if we make the decision to collectively help Cuba or collectively assist Venezuela, because Venezuela could help everybody, yeah? Understanding the realities is part of it. How do we translate that communication for others to understand? Especially understanding the history of geopolitics.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Today, maybe Cuba or Haiti or Venezuela. Tomorrow, it could be Jamaica. It could be Trinidad and Tobago. It could be Guyana, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if that were the case, the people of Guyana or the people of Cuba or the people of Trinidad would want the broader support of CARICOM and other external forces. And you know, the geopolitics and foreign policy issues are cyclical. So what happens if... what? It could be any other Caribbean country at any point in the near future, right? And that is why our positions ought to be principled, reflect principle. And while pragmatism is important, I think what will secure our long-term interest is diplomacy, a measured and principled position, recognizing that we are as vulnerable and volatile as Haiti is, as Cuba is, and any other CARICOM state might be. I think what we ought to be doing, and I think this is what the leaders have been doing generally, have been positioning the interventions in Cuba and Haiti as humanitarian. Recognition that we must provide help to global partnerships and interventions to countries that are facing severe humanitarian crises, as we have been doing in parts of Africa. It's happening now in the Caribbean, within the countries of Haiti and Cuba, and we're ensuring that those people who are desperately in need are getting the assistance they need to survive, to avert death, and to avert starvation, recognizing that the issues that they face are beyond their control. It is not of their own doing.
Yeah.
Again, that should not be conflated with the support for the political regime of these countries. Mm-hmm. It is humanitarian because we are assisting other people like yourself, myself, your children, your neighbors, your relatives who are in a desperate state. maybe because of poor decisions made by their leaders, maybe because of sanctions that emanate from the United States and elsewhere, but ordinary people should not be collectively punished. And that is a position that CARICOM must advance. And that is a position that CARICOM is advancing. And that is the right position to advance.
Let's take let's take some calls, but please finish what you were saying. Your mic just muted. Let's take this call. Yeah. Hello, good morning. Try again. 625-2257, 627-3223 is the number. And one person says here, did your guest answer my question on the future of CARICOM? We will get to that answer in a minute. Another one says here, good morning. All of that continues to exist, but at the end of the day, each government has been elected to do what it is best for their country. And as such, national interest must be paramount. CARICOM did not stand against Venezuela or for Guyana or TNT, a double standard. Europe itself cannot stand against the USA. TNT pays the most into CARICOM. CARICOM has ignored Haiti. Let's try again with calls. Hello, good morning and welcome.
Hello, morning. Morning again, Tasha.
Morning.
Hello, morning. I'm on the air.
Yes,
morning. You
are. Good morning.
Yes, yes. To the gentleman there, you know, you may not get the demograph that we deal with here right now, you know, may not understand totally where you're coming from. But to be honest with you, I totally understand. You know, of particular importance to me is the part where you said that America is part of the contribution to destabilization with reference to the arms and the ammunition and stuff like that, and you know, in terms of how it actually contributes to what we would call the Prime Minister saying this is not a zone of peace, and then not addressing that, and then to put CARICOM, I think there's an error, a convolution of the issue in terms of the choice between America and CARICOM. I don't think that was so much of the issue. But because of the kind of support that it has in this country, it looking as if it's a battle between supporting CARICOM and supporting America. But I don't think it's like that. I think, we should, the strength of CARICOM comes from rising up against the things that affect us as our body. And, I think people are not identifying that there's a total destabilization of CARICOM due to what is taking place, with the support for America. Now that we're back talking them, it's just that the foreign policy is affecting our unity, and I think that needs to be addressed, but I don't think you come on the correct station to deal with it. Thank you very much.
You are on the right station to deal with
that. I completely agree with your caller. We can express support or maintain strategic, diplomatic relations with the U.S. and CARICOM simultaneously. We don't have to extol United, put down CARICOM or denounce CARICOM to extol United States of America. We can maintain diplomatic relations with CARICOM and strategic alliance with United States of America simultaneously. That is what we call measured diplomacy. So we don't have to knock down CARICOM to justify the relations or our diplomatic ties with the United States of America, as we're seeing. Because as I've noted, a U.S. administration only lasts for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And the priorities of each administration differ. And therefore, we should be more concerned about our long-term interests. How do we survive beyond a specific U.S. administration? And that requires a measured foreign policy, a measured diplomatic posture.
And to also remember what our foreign policy was when, let's, for example, take the Barack and Biden administration, the Obama-Biden administration. We seem to have smoother interactions in the Caribbean when those two were in power, as it relates to the Donald Trump-Pence administration. It's more aggressive. It is going into countries, it's aggressive is the best word. So how do we enforce our own policies as a sovereign nation, Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica, and still stay part of an organization like CARICOM? How does the European Union do it? How does is it BRICS? How do they do it?
So what we see, I will bring to your attention the fact that our prime minister was threatened by a U.S. congressman for articulating a principle towards Cuba,
mm-hmm.
which reaffirms the point I'm making. Historically, these very powerful countries have very little respect for our sense of sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
They feel that they can encroach on our sovereignty at their will, because they understand that we're small countries and we have very little leverage, and they feel that, they can do whatever they want in the Caribbean because we are small countries and we have no power, and they can come here and take and destabilize at their will. You know, that has been the historical posture. But for us, I think having conversations, respectful conversations, we can't dictate foreign policy to the United States of America. Can't dictate domestic policies in the United States of America. But there must be forums and opportunities and spaces for us to engage the United States of America respectfully, to seek clarifications, to ask questions, to build consensus around, you know, shared issues of regional interest. There are embassies in the respective countries. We can have these consultations with the embassies. Right, mm-hmm. we can articulate in a better way than any other country can the seriousness and the implications of the challenges that these countries face for the region. I think this is what we can do, and this is what we call diplomacy. We're not talking about antagonism. We're not talking about aggression.
Or promoting it either.
We're not promoting it either. Mm-hmm. What we're promoting is the use of diplomatic channels, which is what we've always done, which is what we should do. And that's the right approach. So, and now we should continue using diplomatic channels. And as I've noted, the posture of most CARICOM states to date has been diplomatic and measured. So they have been using a diplomatic tone and a diplomatic approach, while a few countries have departed from that diplomacy. And that is the issue for me here. It's not singling out or attacking Trinidad, as you call us, seem to think that I'm doing.
Mm.
I'm just saying that in the same way Barbados and other Caribbean countries have maintained a diplomatic posture and tone, that should have been the approach that Trinidad and other countries made use in terms of resolving these issues that affect the broader Caribbean. That is the principal position that I've taken, and that is the position that I will continue to advocate for.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning and welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Tosca.
Good morning.
Good morning to your guests. Very briefly, if you look at the items or the reasons that Ms. Basad Bisesad put forward in the forum, that she's dissatisfied with it, with CARICOM, they are nothing new, and none of them, in my opinion, doesn't rise to the level that it should fracture CARICOM. Like, her first statement was about the Brent Thomas. Then she talked about crime and security and things. All those things are issues that are long-standing issues with CARICOM, and it could be addressed. It doesn't rise to the level of my mind for she to risk fracturing things. My take is that, like the USA, she has no intention of unity of CARICOM. So while it's necessary for we to address her issues that she put on the table, like the gentleman is doing, to put all the rebuttals of those things, I think he is climbing up a wrong wall. We don't want to address the elephant in the room. I want to ask him a question. Why do you think that the United States give Suriname, Guyana, and Trinidad and Tobago an ease in their busy recommendations, but suddenly all the rest of the Caribbean citizens are more likely to infringe immigration, USA immigration laws? I think he knows the reason, and I understand he has to be diplomatic, and you on the station have to be diplomatic. But we have to address the main reason is that Ms. Kamala Prasad Bisesa is not interested in CARICOM unity. She wants to get out and she make 2 steps in that direction, she'll back 1 step. But eventually, we are descending down a rabbit hole, trying to address all her issues that she raised. The issues that we have to raise is why she does not want unity in CARICOM. And like the gentleman said, most people are diplomatic in their approach, whereas Kamala Besadi is antagonistic and don't care. She is seeking the same interest of the USA.
Well, I haven't heard any statement from the Prime Minister in that regard, in directly that way. That is an assumption that you're making. I want to go back to the question of the entities like the United States, China, Britain to a certain extent, in terms of assistance to Caribbean nations. There are times when the assistance is welcomed. For example, in terms of the humanitarian situation in Cuba and Haiti, their assistance from Caribbean nations, while it is helpful, still not at the level that, let's say, the United States and these other countries that I mentioned can give assistance. Is it that we have to now regulate our acceptance of this type of assistance because it does give, let's say, an entryway into the economic stability or the economic situations of these countries? And I guess once taken, you understand where I'm going? It would be very difficult to rescind or not interact with these countries?
All right. So I have to run shortly because I have a class to teach in a few minutes.
Sure.
But I want to say that, you know, what your caller just pointed to is the fact that if we don't support the United States foreign policy position, punitive actions will be taken against us. And those who support the United States, blindly support the United States foreign policy positions, they will be rewarded. And I think that is what your caller alluded to, right? Remember, we have to also balance pragmatism with the fact that we are sovereign countries. And not only are we sovereign countries, we are signatories to many international charters and treaties that be holding us to certain collective or universal responsibilities and principles. And we cannot afford to depart from these international principles that we are binded to, based on the fact that we have signed on to several international treaties and charters and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But while I understand that oftentimes the assistance from the US and from the UK and so forth come with expectations of political and economic alignment. But at the same time, it is diplomacy is a language which understands that your tone and the way you speak and the way you frame issues can create consensus. And that is what diplomacy is about, using a type of a language, framing issues and words in a manner that is inoffensive, that articulate broader concerns that the people we are speaking to can understand and relate and say, hey, yes, you have a valid point, and I understand where you're coming from, right? And again, that is the approach that we ought to use, and that is the approach that I advocate for. Using language, using bilateralism, sitting down at the discussion table, speaking directly about all these issues affect us broadly.
Speaking directly, I like
examples,
that. Yeah.
Speaking, alluding to specific examples. Jamaica saying we are facing a migrant crisis because of what is happening in Haiti. Mm-hmm. Our borders are being overrun by Haitians. It is creating not only displacement problems, it's creating economic, health-related problems, gun-related problems for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about conversation and dialogue and consultations in these spaces. You know, using, leveraging the embassies and so forth. That is all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm not advocating for anything radical. That is not the approach we're advocating for. We're advocating for the use of diplomatic channels. And again, that is the right thing to do. And I will stand by that.
Mr. Gordon, I know you say you have a class in a minute. Ought to be a fly on the wall for this class that you're going to teach today. I would love to hear what the topic would be. As, you know, this is such an ongoing and evolutionary time that we're in. I wonder how your class will go, but I do wish you luck. And thank you so much for joining us here at Freedom 106.5 FM. And maybe after the end of the summit, we can discuss again as to what was really decided by CARICOM and what, as a region, we can look forward to.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5. 106.5.